No one said that last one too loudly, of course. If it were true, it would be a major scandal. The aristocracy settled their disputes only through champions or the code duello. Anything less would have been beneath them. But whatever the secret of his face, the crowds loved him, and they conspired with the arena staff to keep his secret and preserve his identity, even from the Empress's security people, which was probably unique in the Empire. So far, the Empress had declined to press the point, which had given rise to a whole new batch of rumors. He fought always with the sword Morgana, disdaining monofilament edges or other energy weapons. He was a superb swordsman, with speed and skill and trained reflexes beyond anything outside the augmented men. There were still those who claimed he had to be a cyborg of some kind, or at the very least a product of the body shops, but the arena staff said not, and they were best placed to know. The masked gladiator took up his position in the center of the arena and waited patiently for his opponent to come to him. The giant holoscreen showed a close-up of his featureless helm and ran columns of statistics from his previous fights on either side of it. The figures were impressive, never beaten in 137 combats. Only wounded seriously twice in his early days, the latest in a long line of challengers stepped out of a side gate and strode confidently toward the waiting champion. The crowd gave him a good-natured cheer. They admired courage, and fresh blood was always welcome. His name was Auric Skye, and he wanted to become a bodyguard for the lord of Clan Chojiro. But since that was one of the top jobs in the bodyguard market, the only way to jump to the top of the queue was by committing some great act of courage and skill. Auric had chosen to challenge the masked gladiator. He didn't necessarily expect to win, but if he put up a good enough fight, the crowd would very likely turn their thumbs up for him, and he would become one of the very few people who'd fought the masked gladiator and survived. Clan Chojiro would come looking for him then. And besides, he might win. He had an ace up his sleeve, and everywhere else, too. Skye was young, extremely muscular, and almost offensively blonde and handsome. Like the champion, he was armed only with a sword. Clan Chojiro were somewhat old-fashioned in that they didn't approve of clones or espers or any other deviants from the human norm, but they had no objections to the gifts of technology. In this case, Skye was known to have had steel plates inserted under his skin to cover all his vulnerable areas and steel webbing everywhere else, a kind of internal armor with no weak spots. The weight slowed him down, but he had ways of dealing with that. The masked gladiator had never fought such an opponent before. Even so, hardly anyone was betting against him. Skye advanced on the champion, who bowed courteously to him. Skye broke into a lumbering run, his sword stretched out before him. His weight left deep footprints in the sand, but still his movements were eerily fluid, and he covered the intervening distance surprisingly quickly. The champion smiled inside his helm. Whatever body shop had provided Skye with his exceptional muscles had done an excellent job. The masked gladiator stepped forward suddenly, catching Skye by surprise, and swung Morgana around in a whistling arc. Skye couldn't get his sword up in time, and the double-handed blow slammed into the side of his neck. The blow would have decapitated anyone else, but Skye just stood there and took it. He grunted softly at the impact and lurched one step to one side, but he had his balance back in a moment, and his free hand shot up to grab Morgana's blade. His bare hand closed on the steel like a vise, and the gladiator had to use all his strength to pull the blade free. It emerged jerkily from Skye's fist, the sharp edges slicing through the skin, only to grate against the steel webbing beneath it. Skye grinned quickly, ignoring the pain and the blood from his hand and neck, and brought his own sword up in a dazzlingly swift thrust at the gladiator's gut. The champion blocked the blow as though he'd known it was coming, but had to fall back a step to do so. Skye pressed forward, and the gladiator backed away. The crowd couldn't believe it. The champion quickly turned the retreat into a circular motion, and the two men circled each other, looking for an opening. Skye charged forward, and the two swords rang loudly as they slammed together again and again. Skye had the advantage in weight and strength, but the champion had the edge in skill. Again and again he turned aside blows that seemed unstoppable, but try as he might, he was unable to mount a counterattack. Sky wouldn't allow him the time or the space, pressing home his attacks with unflagging energy. The champion doubted Sky could maintain the attack for long, but then he probably wouldn't have to. The gladiator only had to make one mistake, and the match would be over. Unfortunately for Sky, the gladiator didn't believe in making mistakes. Choosing his moment carefully, he stepped inside Sky's blows and launched a blistering attack. Morgana seemed to fly at Sky from every direction at once. He blocked most of the blows, but some got through. Morgana cut him again and again, but to the crowd's loud astonishment, he didn't go down. Wherever Morgana pierced flesh, it found only steel plates or webbing. Hardly any blood flowed, and Sky's face never flinched once. He and Pain had become old friends in the process that had given him his internal armor. And then the gladiator was too slow in pulling back from a lunge, and Sky's spare hand shot out inhumanly quickly and closed on the champion's arm. Muscles bulged, and Sky threw the masked gladiator 30 feet across the arena. He landed hard and rolled quite a way, but was back on his feet in a moment. Behind the featureless steel helm, he could have been panting or scowling or grimacing with pain, but his stance was firm, and his sword arm was steady. Sky lurched into a run again, building momentum like a runaway truck. The gladiator shook himself once as though to settle himself, and then lifted Morgana and waited for his opponent to come to him. The crowd were going wild at the prospect of finally seeing their champion beaten, humbled, perhaps even killed. They screamed warnings and advice and encouragement to both fighters, standing on their seats for a better view, and there was a flurry of last-minute betting as people changed their minds. The gladiator stood his ground. He could run, but that wasn't his style. He could surrender and beg for mercy, but he didn't do that either. He hefted Morgana angrily. A good sword, the best he'd ever known, but helpless against implanted steel armor. And then a thought came to him, and he smiled inside his featureless steel helm. Sky was almost upon him, sword pulling back for the killing thrust. The masked gladiator stepped forward in a perfect lunge, and the tip of his sword leapt out and plunged through Sky's left eyeball and on into his brain, the only part of him that hadn't been protected. For a long moment, Auric Sky just stood there, transfixed on the champion's sword. And then the masked gladiator pulled Morgana free, and Sky collapsed, as though that was all that had been holding him up. He fell heavily and lay still. And the gladiator saluted him once with Morgana before turning away. The crowd was beside itself, cheering till their throats were raw, pounding their hands together till they ached, even those who'd been foolish enough to bet on Sky. The masked gladiator walked back to the main gates, one hand raised to acknowledge the crowd. And Auric Sky, who'd given up part of his humanity in his quest to become a bodyguard for Clan Shojiro, lay broken and forgotten on the bloody sands. In the wolf private box, Jacob turned triumphantly to his family.
"Now that is a real fighter. Strong, smart, committed. Find a weakness and exploit it. You can all learn a lesson from a man like that."
His family murmured politely in reply, but kept their thoughts to themselves. Friends, enemies, and allies. Mistworld was the rebel planet, the only rebel planet in the whole of the Empire, a world made by renegades and traitors, insurgents and troublemakers. Schemes for rebellion against the Empire came and went without accomplishing much, because the rebels were only safe as long as they stayed on Mistworld, protected by a powerful psionic screen that was the equal of anything the Empire could send against it. And to this last refuge, this last chance, this last roll of the loaded dice, came Hazel Dark and Owen Deathstalker, the ex-clone legger and the outlawed lord, to start a rebellion that would spread far beyond the world that birthed it. The Sunstrider howled out of hyperspace like a bullet shot from a gun, and then slowed reluctantly into high orbit around Mistworld. Its shield snapped on again, and the sensor spikes shimmered, but there was no trace anywhere of the two star cruisers that had been attacking it. In the luxurious main cabin, Owen sank back in his chair with a sigh, and Hazel blinked respectfully.
I'm impressed. We made it all the way here, across half the damn empire, in just one jump. It normally takes at least 7, and only then if you've got a shit-hot navigator. How much power did we just burn up?
Hardly any, said Owen smugly. I told you, this is a whole new kind of star drive. It's going to make everything else obsolete.
How does it work?
Owen shrugged. I don't know. I just bought the ship. I didn't design it. I had my AI scan the manual so it could fly the thing, but I've only flipped through it. I'm not really very technically minded. I've always had people to do that sort of thing for me.
That's one attitude you'll have to lose, Aristo. An outlaw can't afford to rely on anyone but themselves.
You should know. All right, what's our next step?
We ask very politely for landing permission. Once we're dirtside, we're protected by the planet's espers, but out here we're a sitting duck for the first Imperial ship to come along. It won't take them long to come here looking for us, and while this ship might be fast, it's got no heavy-duty weapon systems at all.
Well, no, it's a pleasure yacht, not a warship.
Next time, look a little further in the catalog. I'll contact Mistport. It's the only starport on Mistworld. In fact, it's their only city. It's not what you'd call a densely populated world, and once you've lived there for a while, you'll know why. Desolate bloody place, all snow and ice and fog. I just hope I can pull a few strings, call in some old favors. It's been a while since I was last here, and I'm not sure if I've got any friends left in Mistport.
She was silent for a long moment, frowning, and Owen studied her thoughtfully. She fascinated him, if only because he'd never met anyone like her before. He'd grown up believing the only good rebel was a dead rebel, and now he was one. His life had changed completely, and he was going to have to understand Hazel and her world if he was to survive in it. What brought you here before? Hazel started, jerked out of her thoughts, then shrugged self-consciously.
I spent some time here recovering after my stint as a mercenary on Loki during the Succession Wars. As usual, with my native wit and massive experience, I had no trouble picking the losing side to sign on with. We got our ass kicked good. My side scattered to the winds, and I ended up here because it was the only place my enemies wouldn't come looking for me. As it turned out, I was wrong about that, too. But that's another story.
What are we going to do once we've landed? A hell of a lot of people are going to be looking for me, and the price on my head would tempt a sainted nun.
What's this wee bit? I hauled your ass out of the line of fire because I couldn't just stand by and watch you die, but I haven't adopted you. In fact, if I'd known you were an Aristo, I'd probably have joined in the shooting myself. As it is, once we are safely down, I am going my way, and you can go yours. The last thing I need is a know-nothing tenderfoot like you slowing me down and attracting attention. I have my life to rebuild, and that's going to be hard enough without carrying a passenger.
I am quite capable of looking after myself. I've been trained as a warrior by some of the finest tutors in the Empire.
Judging by what I've seen, you should ask for your money back. You're a liability, Owen, and I've got my own problems. You'll do all right. Selling this ship should make you one of the wealthiest people on Mistworld if you don't let yourself get fleeced.
Sell Sunstrider? Are you out of your mind? She's my only chance for getting off this planet.
Owen, you're not going anywhere. This is the end of the line for people like us. Mistworld is the only planet where you can hope to survive. Anywhere else, they'll cut your head off the moment you raise it to look around. You aren't going to find it easy here, but at least you'll have a fighting chance. And that's the best you can ever hope for as an outlaw.
Owen thought hard. Much as he hated to admit it, he needed Hazel Dark. She was loud, overbearing, and definitely common, but she understood this new world of outlaws, and as yet, he didn't. You can't just abandon me. You have contacts here. I don't know anyone. You can't just walk off and leave me to the wolves.
Watch me. I don't owe you anything, Aristo. If I'd known you were going to cling on like this, I'd have shot you myself.
All right, thought Owen. So much for appealing to her better nature. She is an outlaw, after all. How about this? I'll hire you as my bodyguard till I learn the ropes. Name your own price. Hazel looked at him thoughtfully.
And just what were you planning to pay me with?
As you just pointed out, selling the Sunstrider will make me extremely rich. If the right person was there to oversee the deal.
10%. I get my money right off the top, and you don't get to make any conditions. You also don't get to whine, complain, or ask impertinent questions. I'll stick with you till you're established, but then I'm off. You're too tempting a target, Deathstalker. I feel nervous just standing next to you.
Owen seethed inwardly. He had a strong suspicion that 10% of what the Sunstrider would bring would be enough to set up a dozen men for life. But it wasn't as if he had a choice in the matter. He couldn't command her as a lord, or beg her as a friend, so that just left money. All right, you've got a deal. He put out his hand for her to shake, but she just looked at it.
Forget the handshake, Deathstalker. We've no reason to trust each other. All you need to know is that if you try to cross or cheat me, I'll cut you up into bite-sized chunks and to hell with all your fancy training. Now let me think.
She stood there for a long moment, frowning, concentrating. Owen lowered his hand and let it rest on his belt near his sword. With anyone else, he would have challenged them to a duel for such an insult, but Hazel was different. He had a feeling he could come to respect her, if he didn't kill her first.
Assuming the few friends I made last time I was here are still around and still feeling friendly, I should be able to talk our way past quarantine. We can't afford to hang around long enough to be recognized. Unfortunately, we can't afford to rely on my old contacts. Lifespans tend to be rather short on Mistworld. If the people don't kill you, the planet will. I hope you've got some industrial-strength warm clothing tucked away on this ship somewhere, or we're going to freeze solid just walking off the landing pads.
Assuming your old contacts are no longer in the land of the living or the willing, and we can't talk our way past quarantine, how long would they hold us?
Long enough to call an esper to dig through our minds in search of something incriminating. Mistport security takes its job very seriously. The Empire keeps trying to smuggle in disguised plague ships and the like.
And we can't afford to be identified. Great. Just great. All right, Hazel. Do whatever you have to, but keep us out of quarantine. Only bear in mind that whatever bribe you end up offering is coming out of your 10%. Clear?
Hazel nodded approvingly.
See? You're starting to think like an outlaw already.
What sort of planet is Mistworld?
Said Owen as they headed for the comm panels.
You make it sound like a hell world.
It's a hard world, Deathstalker. Very poor, hardly any high tech, and the people who come here tend to be the lowest of the low.
I'm sure you felt right at home here, Hazel.
You will come to regret that remark in the long, cold days ahead, Aristo. You'll either learn to fit in here or die. Your choice. Ozymandias, are you listening?
Of course, Hazel,
said the AI promptly.
A great many people have been trying to talk to us. I have been waiting to ascertain whether we wish to talk to them.
Patch me through to the Mistport Control Tower. Everyone else can wait.
As you wish. May I point out at this stage that I am a very sophisticated system and quite capable of running rings around any AIs the Mistport might have.
Don't even think about it. What they use for computers down there would scare the electronic spit out of you. They're very powerful and extremely dangerous. Shield yourself at all times and stay well clear of anything that isn't entirely human. Like everything else on Mistworld, the computers have got teeth you wouldn't believe.
Nice place you brought me to.
It has its charms. Raise the control tower, Ozymandias. Hello, Mistport Central. This is the Sunstrider looking for sanctuary. Please acknowledge.
This is Duty Esper John Silver,
said a tired voice from the comm panels.
Don't adjust your systems. We've lost visual again. I need a full rundown on your crew, cargo, and last planetfall. Don't bother lying. Our espers will get it out of you anyway.
John? Is that you, Silver, you old pirate? You're the last voice I was expecting. This is Hazel Dark. Remember, we worked together on the Angel of Night swindle.
The good God preserve and save us. Hazel Bloody Dark. I always knew you'd be back someday. No doubt dragging a long trail of creditors behind you. Who you got mad at you this time?
Practically everyone. Look, John, I need a favor.
You always do. What is it this time?
I can't afford to hang around in quarantine. Too many people looking for me and this ship. I need to go to ground for a while. Will you vouch for me?
Depends. Are you alone?
One passenger, and I vouch for him.
That's not much of a recommendation. I have a strong feeling I'm going to regret this, but all right. Put your ship down on Pad 7, and then disappear into the mists. I can only buy you 24 hours, though.
That should be enough. Thanks, John. How the hell did a dyed-in-the-blood pirate like you end up in security?
Times are hard, girl. and Mistport needed all the espers it could get. Things have gone to hell since you were last here. Empire hit us with something really nasty. Over half our espers are dead or mind-burned. As a result, security is tighter than ever, but with nowhere near enough people to enforce it. Look me up when you've got a chance. Unless you're still trouble. In which case, I never heard of you. Silver out.
Now that was a stroke of luck, said Owen, and then stopped as he saw the expression on Hazel's face. Wasn't it?
I don't know. Maybe. The John Silver I knew was an ex-pirate and a confidence trickster, and now he's in charge of Mistport security? Things must have really gone to the dogs since I was last here. And we're not out of the woods yet. We've got 24 hours, and then either I report in with a lot of convincing answers, or Silver's people will tear the city apart looking for us. On top of that, we have to use that time to find a buyer for Sunstrider before someone recognizes it. You can bet every Imperial agent on Mistworld has a detailed description of it and you by now, which means we have 24 hours to make the sale, bank the money, and then go to ground so thoroughly that even the really talented and highly motivated people looking for us won't be able to find us. Once things have quieted down a little, we can reappear with new names and backgrounds and a hell of a lot of money to back us up.
Why can't we just change our looks in a body shop? Hazel gave him the kind of look a tutor gives a dull but persistent pupil. Owen was getting rather tired of that look, but kept his temper.
Remember what I said about limited high tech on this world? The only tech they've got here is what smugglers can sneak past the Empire. I'm not saying there isn't a body shop somewhere in Mistport, but if there is, you can bet it's the only one, and so exclusive that they charge an arm and a leg. Possibly literally. Which means it'll be watched night and day by Imperial agents, just in case we're stupid enough to go anywhere near it. Try and keep up, Deathstalker. I can't carry you all the way. And before you start sulking again, could you perhaps put a little thought toward raising some stake money? I've got a little credit stashed away here and there in Mistport, but not a lot. I had to earn it the hard way.
Really? How?
You don't need to know. Ozymandias, are we cleared to land?
As soon as we pay a rather exorbitant docking fee, yes.
Owen asked how much. The AI told him, and Owen nearly had a fit.
I'm not paying that. It's extortionate.
Not really. Not when you consider how much more they could make by handing you over to the Empire. Besides, you're not paying it. I'm going to have to. And just for the record, no, this is not coming out of my 10%.
Ozymandias cleared its throat politely, something that never failed to disconcert Owen, not least because the AI didn't have a throat to clear.
I really feel I should remind you, Owen, that the new files I discovered hidden in my memory were quite specific concerning an establishment in Mistport that you should visit in order to find help. I also have a name to go with the address, but you're not going to like it.
Try me. I'd be hard-pressed to name anything about this situation I do like.
The name is Jack Random.
He's here? On Mistworld? How the hell did he get tangled up with my father's intrigues? I wouldn't have thought they were in the same class.
A good question, Owen, for which I have as yet no satisfactory answer.
You got really polite since Hazel came aboard.
Are you complaining?
Owen thought hard. His head was beginning to ache. Jack Random, the professional rebel, legendary warrior. He fought the system. Any system. He'd been fighting the Empire for more than 20 years, leading one rebellion after another on any number of planets. He was a spellbinding orator with a keen eye for injustice, and never had any trouble finding more hot-headed fools to follow him to death or glory. And so it went for many years. But the decades passed, and the Empire stood as strong as ever, and people remembered the many lost battles rather than the few triumphs, and they stopped listening. The price on Jack Random's head became increasingly tempting, and the bounty hunters went after him in earnest. He'd been forced to drop out of sight, and no one had seen him for years.
Trust my father to hook up with one of the biggest all-time losers. Even I have more sense than to tie myself to Jack Random. By all accounts, a legendary fighter and hero, but a piss-poor general. Hazel, I place myself in your hands.
In your dreams, Aristo. But please, Owen, watch your step, and leave all the talking to me. If the people we're going to see get even a hint of who you really are, we are both dead.
Relax. I am not without experience.
I know how to comport myself in public.
That's what I mean! You can't go around using words like comport. It's a dead giveaway. Look, don't say a word, and I'll pass you off as my deaf-mute cousin.
Owen looked at her. Don't do me any favors.
Trust me, I won't.
Owen kept his mouth shut and his eyes open as Hazel led him through the narrow streets of Mistport. The city was in a hell of a state. Rebuilding was going on everywhere he looked, and the people seemed uniformly sour and tight-lipped. From the look of the place, Owen didn't blame them one bit. The stone and timber buildings leaned out over the street like drunken old men, apologizing to each other. There was mud and filth in the street, and the smell was appalling. A thick fog pearled the air in sheets of gray, so that lamps burned brightly at irregular intervals, even though it was getting on toward midday. People filled the streets, huddled under heavy furs and cloaks, looking straight ahead and using their elbows with practiced skill. Owen and Hazel kept the hoods of their cloaks pulled well forward so that their faces were hidden in shadow. No one stared at them or showed any curiosity. Apparently, anonymity was a common state in Mistport. Owen trudged on through the mud and slush and beat his gloved hands together to force out the cold. He'd taken the heaviest clothes from Sunstrider's wardrobe, but there hadn't been a lot of choice. Hazel dragged him from one low dive to another in search of old acquaintances, but no one wanted to talk. After the recent troubles, everyone was busy looking after their own affairs. Hazel kept plugging away while Owen's spirits drooped. He couldn't even talk to Oz for company. They'd agreed to keep communication to a minimum for security's sake. You could never be sure who was listening in on Mistworld. Finally, Hazel came up with a name, if not a location. Ruby Journey.
Never heard of her.
No reason why you should have, Aristo. You don't move in the same circles. Ruby's a bounty hunter, and a damned good one. She's an old friend of mine from way back. We mugged our first tourist together. She'll put us in touch with the right people, provided we make her a good enough offer.
Not another 10%, Hazel shrugged.
Up to you. But if you want the best, you have to be prepared to pay for it. Don't worry too much about it. She'll give you a discount because you're with me. All we have to do now is find her.
Oh, great. More tramping back and forth.
What are you moaning about now?
You wanted an order? I'm spoiled for choice. Apart from the insanity of trusting our safety to a bounty hunter, it's bitter cold, I haven't a clue where we are, I can't feel my hands anymore, and my feet aren't talking to me. We've been tramping around this pitiful excuse for a city for ages without getting anywhere useful, and my stomach thinks my throat's been cut. Also, the smell is disgusting. Something really drastic must have happened in the sewers.
Sewers? Don't show your ignorance. Around here, a cesspit is a sign of luxury. Be grateful the night soil collectors have already been round. Still, where we're going next should cheer you up. Another old friend of mine is running a tavern not far from here, the Blackthorn. She'll know where Ruby is. Cider knows everything. Let's go.
She set off down the street at a good pace, brimming with confidence and good cheer. Owen trudged after her, grumbling under his breath. He paused for a moment to pull his cloak more tightly about him, and someone pressed a coin in his hand before hurrying on. Owen looked at it for a long moment before realizing he'd been taken for a beggar. He was tempted to throw the money after the giver, but he didn't. Money was money.